Accession number 13717, Lieutenant Colonel Charles G, Reel 15.
Colonel G, Reel 15, we were talking about your time in Spangenberg Castle POW camp, off flag 9A, I think.
Yes, 9A. Somewhere fairly near the beginning, Germans were fussing frightfully one day about, they discovered one of the pilots had bailed out of an aeroplane and had been mutilated, and of course that was the one caused to be buried.
The one, this was, you made reference to, about it being killed by French African troops.
Right, yes.
And mutilated by them.
Yes.
And what were the consequences of this?
Well, they thought, very seriously thought of shooting some people about it. I was very cross.
Did they have any idea you were involved?
I no. Mean,
even only
no, they were much later in the war. I might have known some of them, trusted them, but were much far too dangerous to admit to having anything to do with it. Then later with the security officer who was a very highly efficient German and a very nice person, and we got very friendly with him.
Did they do anything at all about this French?
No, they didn't. Just one dig against the English. They publicised it a lot, I suppose. But it was unfair to one person from the upper camp that I had met did eventually escape and get to England. It was the only person that got, what was the main camp in Germany that all the people were sent to. You probably watched a lot of films about it.
I know what you mean, but I can't remember it.
I can't remember, but he did eventually get there, and the only one that ever got out of there and got home. And he was incredibly, incredibly lucky, as well as brave. But, I mean, he had to find some doors open that were normally shut and so on. It wasn't all brain, it was bravery plus luck. He got blown up by the Irish as a Member of Parliament in Westminster.
Airy Neave.
Airy Neave, yes.
What was he like? Because you say you knew him.
I didn't know him well. I think he was... Well, that's what I said, brave and lucky. I didn't know him well. But there were some, a number of interesting people about it, written books about it, so on. And quite a number of people got out of a camp and walked about Germany for a bit. And of course, eventually, there were 50 killed by the Germans. And that war office stopped escaping then.
Now, what about the German guards and the their camp structure? I mean, how did it all work?
They had old people on guard, and they weren't very friendly or anything. I suppose occasionally we must have been able to bribe some of them, use some of them to get information about tickets and so on. The German commandant in the lower camp, when my daughter was born, my second daughter was born, he got a wire came. My wife sent wires three different ways. They arrived at 1 month intervals, and he did congratulate me on the little lady, and that's about all the English he knew. But he was quite a nice bloke. In the upper camp, I remember when we were first there. There was a number of people were wild. Lady Neave may have been one. Behaviour on parade. And the Germans, I really thought they were going to shoot people.
What sort of behaviour?
Wild and silly. It was a nuisance of the Germans, stopping them counting correctly. And
this is on the roll call parade, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. And then I think some people had the idea that It was our duty to be silly, only was it to make more Germans. But it interfered with ordinary life, and it was quite clear that if each kept fairly quiet, and you could get on with your escape if you wanted to escape, or live and learn, behave properly. On the whole, after a week or two of wild behaviour on parade, I think the Germans must have shifted some of them out of the camp somewhere else.
And you disapproved of that sort of...
Well, it was silly and really rather dangerous, I think, because...
Counterproductive.
We had, anyway, surrendered. You've got to be... And they had not killed us, and they could have. I mean, one of the things I thought of when I was hiding in a cellar in Wancourt is I don't see how tanks can take prisoners. And in fact, one of the prisoners I got on very well with, Germany, had been captured near Arras a little later than, and put on top of the tank and taken into action against his own company, lying on top of the tank. But you see, it is difficult to take prisoners with tanks unless you overawe it. And one of the things that happened in the upper camp was a man came in who had, in fact, been one of seven in a battery, I think, and they'd all been shot. And he, when it was his turn to be shot, turned his head sideways, as I might have done, or anybody might, and the bullet went in there and out there. And he was in our camp, prisoner of war camp. And then later, another one came, had also been shot through the both cheeks. He'd been in a barn with a couple of 100 people, and the Germans had said, 10 of you come out, and 10 went out, and they were shot, and said, next 10 come out, because they naturally didn't. And so they threw bombs in and got machine guns ready and set the place on fire, and one of the men survived. The story, he came to us, the story was that he'd found himself lying in a field with a lot of very painful wounds, and a German officer came along, and he asked the German officer to shoot him. The German officer did, but he went through the arm out the other side without doing very much damage. And then the Red Cross came along and he got to hospital and he got sent to us. And I did, after the war, when doing the librarian at Clifton College, get 35 volumes of the Nuremberg trial, and I looked it up. And two German officers were hung or shot for doing that. See, they'd captured all the Germans and abandoned. I suppose we've captured all their things. In any case, it was looked up and got right.
It sounds like the Wormhout massacre.
Yes. But all things that happened in the upper camp at various times. One was we were all had to pack up and were taken by train to Poland. 400 of us. Two camps, I suppose, or two batches. I had a lovely journey to Poland for quite a long time, a first-class carriage, and fed, masses of tanks taking us to the station. Well, they spent a fortune on it. And we got there, and we had to fall in. The Germans read, this is, you were brought here because a German officer has written from Canada. Their camp had got burnt down, and they were put on ships in the St. Lawrence River, old ships, and somebody wrote home and said he was in a room with 18 others and the door was locked at night, etc., etc. But it wasn't a prisoner of war camp, and said, we have reproduced conditions as far as we can, and we want the senior officers first, and the senior officers are taken down the lowest floor of an old fort that hadn't been used for 150 years. Something rather, I suppose it had, because there were bed bugs in it and a lot of green slime, and it boarded up half the window, and I was in the majors or something on the floor above, and I got bed bugs, and we were locked in the night. We went back into Hector's latrine, and it was awful. And we were there only a fairly short time before a German officer got back from Canada to Germany. And Germans were, told us to write home, get these conditions altered. We've done it deliberately. We want our officers in Canada treated properly. Get your government to alter it. Well, of course, we didn't write home about it. But the German got home, and they said, oh, go and see the camp. There were two forts in Poland, one near the frontier. Ours was near Thorns. And he arrived and said, God, the ships were perfectly good. Just some man writing home to grouse to his wife to keep his wife faithful to him or something. And we knew that all the time because some of our officers were Canadian and knew the place. Knew the ships were perfectly good and our conditions were perfectly awful. But
how long were you there for about?
Well, about a month in the bad conditions. And then when the officer came, they brought us up to the top floor and in the daylight. And some of the people liked that. I didn't.
But what state were you in after a month in those? Because, I mean, with lice and things.
Oh, it was awful. Bed bugs and things I've bitten. I eventually killed the beasts that beat me, but somebody from their room went to hospital and had 7 or 8 on him. It really was miserable, and the place stank rather, and was a 18th century fort. But eventually, when we moved up on top and the weather got a bit better, and the spring came on, and it would have been roaring hot in summer. And we met our men in the neighborhood, and they came into the camp and with bread they could buy in Poland for us and so on. And our top senior officers had a lovely room with themselves, and they were getting a lot of wine and so on. They wanted to stay, but I was one of the leaders saying, we must go, this place won't be healthy. At least think of it all.
You mean appalling. Disease?
Not disease, yes. And it would be red hot in summer. Everything is practically no courtyard to exercise in, and it would be boiling hot. And we did know that they were obviously going to attack Russia because of all the transport round about in Poland. And so a number of us argued we'd got to go, and persuaded them to go back. Let us go back where we were. So we went back to the other camp. Castle. Now, another similar one happened in the castle, whether it was the same year or the next year, I don't know. Some German prisoners being taken south to the Cape from North Africa through the Red Sea, had apparently tried to take the ship over or something. In any case, they had to be dealt with. And somebody wrote and complained that they'd been marched without any pants or something. One of the ways of stopping people escaping is to take their trousers, and complained about things. But the Germans this time for us, we knew something was up because they had all sorts of machine guns laid on us and around the camp. And we were told to pack everything for a move. So we packed everything. Then we had to go down into the moat. And they spent a whole day carting it all away. Just locked the suitcase. And most of us got suitcases, packed it something. And they took it all away. They left us nothing but 1 spoon each, 1 knife for the camp to cut bread. And it wasn't enough. We had to get another. Everything had gone, except our bedding. And it was rather fun. We had to talk and tell each other about our lives and so on, and invent games. and it did us good. It eventually broke down because I, for instance, had a lot of washing in the village, and that came back, so I had change of clothes that nobody else had, or only a few of us had bothered to wash, and then they complained that it wasn't fair, and so they got leave to go down to their suitcases and get some pyjamas or something out, and then we all got leave to go down to our suitcases to get what we needed, and so it petered out.
Where did all these clothes come from that you've got? Because when you arrived, you'd only had what you stood up in. How had you gradually built up your kit?
Well, German canteen sold it. We got paid in camp money. So we had some of our money. I couldn't. I ran out of money, and I wrote for more. My wife managed to get me sent £20, and they gave me a very bad rate of exchange, which the Germans on their own discovered, sorry, the British on their own discovered, and put right at the end of the war. I'd had to have about two suitcases to carry one stuff from one camp to another.
So you gradually bought things?
Bought things like suitcases.
And what would you have in them?
Well, I had a uniform sent from London, from England.
British uniform. You said you'd been given a Czech one, or
yes, a British uniform sent, and I think battle dress. God knows, I'd get the battle dress for nothing. A uniform sent. I had lined shoes sent, or boots, glastonberries, and all sorts of clothes we wore.
So you could get things sent through the Red Cross, or something.
Yes, two clothing parcels a year, which were allowed to include £4 of chocolate.
So you'd get that, and that's how you built up your kit.
Yep.
What else would you have in your kit besides clothes?
Books.
What sort of books were you after?
In Poland, I bought two huge necklaces of amber. I sent those home during the war, as if I'd made them.
What else would you have?
I did a lot of cross-stitch sewing, my wife said.
I'll come back to that.
Things
that's a
like
hobby,
that.
What about, how did you, you're keeping your clothes clean. How did you manage that? I mean, you said you sent it to the village. Were you allowed to?
Yes. Organised laundry in the village.
Who organised that? Was that you?
I don't know. No, I...
You just did the kitchen?
There was a laundry. My colonel did. He was in charge of the laundry. I used to help him one day a week.
Where was the laundry?
It went down to the village. I think just the village women. But
so
the camp.
The laundry was where that you collected the clothes and sorted them and sent them to be done in the village.
Yes.
So that's what you mean by
that. Yes. Laundry. And then he sorted them, and I was one of the people who helped him sort them or distribute them again.
So you were able to keep your clothes fairly clean, but what about actually washing facilities for yourself?
Oh, yes, it was equipped fairly well. We had the showers occasionally. Hot showers occasionally. There was a catch later on that they couldn't provide the fuel for it, but let us go out into the woods and cut it, or help cut it. So that was the most enjoyable thing I did as a prisoner of war. Occasional day out, sawing wood, stacking it in cubic meter piles, and carrying up as much as I could from the room. And that's why the castle burned down when it got hit. My room had red hollow under every bed, everywhere was full of either wood or coal dust. They used briquettes. They gave us a lot of briquette dust. I used to collect the dust, and it was going to be cold for everything. We got properly organized, both in the castle and occasionally in the lower camp when we were there.
With being able to wash and clean your clothes, I presume lice wasn't a problem, body lice. You didn't have any problem with that?
No. No problem with lice at all. Nor did the orderlies, I think.
What about the orderlies? I mean, did you have an orderly to yourself? Or?
No, there was one or two orderlies who used to tidy our room or clean our room in the morning. They didn't make beds or anything. We all made our own beds, but they did sweep the place out.
And how many of you were there to a room, roughly?
I was in room 13 with 12 of us.
And did you each have your own bunk, or was it those layered bunk beds?
Two, one above another. There were 10 or 12 in the room, because we had the wireless set in our room. And that took a lot of time.
The wireless set? You weren't allowed wireless set?
We weren't allowed it.
But how did that happen?
Earlier, some doctor had got a wireless set in one hand and his medical instruments in the other. When they'd search his medical instruments, he swapped them over and they searched them again. So he got a wireless set and we took it to bits.
It was in his bag?
No, just a set, quite not.
A small little one?
I suppose, something like that, I suppose. It was carry. And again, in a bag. And they searched one bag, and he swapped bags and brought it to the camp. And we stripped it down, and somebody took charge of it. And we had to be terribly careful in using it, particularly in moving it from one camp to another. At one time, it went in the middle of a big medicine ball, from one camp to another. Another time, inside a piano, I think.
And what use did you make of it?
Well, when... in room 13, which is exciting, I was there for years, a man had it carefully hidden under the floor, under a window, where there were two windows in the room, and...
What, under the floorboards?
Yes. And very, very elaborately done. I never knew the details of it, didn't bother to look. But when we wanted, say, the 9 o'clock news, we couldn't do any other because there'd be Germans in the camp. The camp had to be searched, there was no German in it. And then we'd have a guard on to let us know if we'd take down the news, and then the other people in the room, about half of us, would make notes of it and take it round the camp. There were so many rooms in the camp that I think one only went to half of them. I remember particularly taking the news of the Battle of Stalingrad around, and a marvellous one, taking that down, and the sinking of the Bismarck.
How would you tell people? I mean, you just go into the room.
Go into the room. The camp had been searched. No German could be. Here's the news from the wireless.
You just read it out.
Read it out. Churchill's speeches were so steady that we could make them up almost exactly with a little care.
And you mean you could get them all down between
get
you?
Them down, get them almost down or remember them. And between us we got them nearly right, and they were a great thrill to give out. And and of course that took quite a long time each night, and great care of guards
all,
on.
That was all you used it for, was it?
Yes, all we used it for. It was known as the canary by us. But of course, a lot of people are just stupid to write home. We have a canary that sings to us every day. And six people put that in a letter, it's going to be censored. The Germans knew perfectly well it was a wireless set. When eventually.
Did they search for it then?
They searched for it, yes. But eventually it was given away. There was a phony, or slightly phony person, joined the camp very early on, openly. With letters of recommendation signed by Germans. And that was the lower camp, and it looked awfully fishy. But no evidence against him was ever accrued beyond that. But the once somebody joined us in the upper camp, it was always looked fishy. He looked fishy to start with. He came
in
private clothes. He said he'd swapped. He'd been taken in Crete or somewhere, or Greece, somewhere coming up through Yugoslavia. He thought it would be easier to escape if he were a private. He said he'd been promoted on the field of battle. And the authorities gave him an enormous amount of interrogation, and they passed it as fit. But he was always a bit suspicious, because he seemed to be trying to join any plan of escape, and he was always, after a bit, always in room 13. In any case, one
did you
did
allow him to? So you wouldn't allow someone suspicious like these two to know where the radio was?
No. But eventually, the Germans shifted about 10 people from our camp to one over the hill, and he was one, and they picked on him, so he said, and bullied him. Anyway, he gave away everything in the camp that he knew of. He told them exactly where to find the tunnel, which had been going for a long time, and they went into the washroom and removed the stove, and they went down under. It had got about 300 or 400 yards through solid rock, going along through the castle.
And this private uniformed chap, how do you know it was him?
We did know from somebody from the camp. I don't know, we did know, was quite certain. He'd said he'd been bullied by them and picked on.
By the Germans?
The Germans.
But you didn't believe him, you thought he was...
I think he'd been planted. But,
did you have anything to do with that tunnel, or was that not your field?
I didn't have anything to do with the tunnel, it was stupid.
It did
had to go about 200... yes, I knew about it. And some of our room did that stint of work every day. No, you'd have to go about 200 yards through solid rock. That would only get you about the other side of the moat. And all the difficulties on. But they were quite happy. So a lot of people had been cracked on.
So you thought it was a foolish project?
It was, but it kept 50 people quite happy. They were doing their work for escape.
So you didn't object to it? Because
no, it was psychologically right. It was very expensive, because we filled the deepest well in Germany with spoil out of it. And then they didn't know where to put spoil in the castle. It was difficult. Some ingenious bird counted the rooms and measured everything. They found there was a room concealed. And so they climbed into it somehow. And it was a big room full of Germans' orchestra, all the pieces of instruments of their orchestra. And that was full of stuff from the tunnel. And we had to buy some new instruments. And we had to pay the earth for having the well cleaned out.
What about relationships between prisoners? Because you were there such a long time. How did you get on with your fellow officers?
Well, eventually life was really ordered. It was sort of 2 meals a day. We had a good library. People learned all sorts of things, passed exams. I did for one.
What did you study?
I took a Cambridge certificate in education. £50, nominally £50 a year, I'd more pay for it if I hadn't been at Clifton College. And so they sent me out 23 books, but 18 of them came after I'd done the exam. But since I knew more about teaching them than correctors of the exam, it wasn't difficult. But lots of people did pass useful exams, and new people that came to the camp were always equipped with everything they wanted from people like me that had been prisoner some time, had spare pajamas and spare everything and hand them out.
So, keeping on this education thing, because that's turned up that. You'd learn that, and you took your exam papers. Was it taken in the exam conditions? Would someone be invigilating
yes.
you?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And what about you? Were a teacher? Would you teach other courses to other people?
Well, I did a few lectures of English and so on, and organised some readings of Shakespeare earlier on. A friend of mine in my room taught French all day. He was a teacher of French at a prep school in England. And he wrote appalling letters home, saying he's having an awful life, and he wasn't. And I had he and the Germans tested us all for tuberculosis once, and they found two people, that particular one from my room, and they took away and cured them and sent them home. And I had tea with him as soon as I got home, and my wife knew him well.